WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Stick around for a breakdown of the day's top local news stories later on in the podcast. First, we'll get into the conversation that you just clicked on. Today is World AIDS Day, and we're taking a moment to reflect on how far we've come and what's still at stake. Around the world, tens of millions of people are living with HIV. And here in Illinois, thousands continue to navigate life with the virus. What was once considered a death sentence? Well, it's now, for many, a manageable condition. And that is thanks to decades of medical breakthroughs and community advocacy. But those gains are not guaranteed, because federal funding cuts under the Trump administration are now raising real concerns about maintaining progress. So in this next conversation, we're going to dig into the advancements transforming HIV care, as well as the challenges that are threatening to slow them down. At the table, we had John Peller, who's president and CEO of the AIDS Foundation of Chicago, Brandon Hill, who's president and CEO of Vivant Health, one of the nation's largest providers of HIV healthcare and social services. He's also president of the International Academy of Sex Research, and Jasmine Michael, who is director of the HIV hotline at the Center on Halsted. How is World AIDS Day feeling for all of you this year? I'll start with you, Jasmine. I wonder if you're still sort of celebrating the advancement of medicine that I kind of just talked about, or is this now overshadowed by these federal funding cuts and rollbacks that we've been seeing?
I think World AIDS Day is always going to be a celebration for how far we've come, the advancements we've made, knowing that folks are living long, happy lives with all the advancements that we've made. But it is kind of overshadowed by the fact that cuts are now killing people. There are people out here dying because they can't afford or don't have access to medication.
Yeah. Brandon?
It's still a celebration for us. I mean, we're obligated to still honor the people who we've lost to HIV and AIDS, and really think about what we've accomplished in 40 years. And, you know, no matter who's in the office, we're going to continue to do that.
Mm-hmm. John?
You know, earlier or last week, the White House declared that they were explicitly banning the government from marking World AIDS Day in any way, shape, or form. So that makes it even more critical for community-based organizations like ours to stand up and mark the day.
We'll be digging more into some of those setbacks coming from the White House. But I want to focus on the positives just a little longer here, Brandon, because it is estimated that 40 million people across the globe are living with this virus. And here in Illinois, that number is about 41,000.
Yes.
Describe what life is like today for people who have HIV.
Well, for most of us in the HIV care space, the goal is that life looks just like everyone else's life. People live long, healthy lives. We have folks living with HIV in our care that will be turning 90 this year.
Wow.
This is a manageable disease when we address all of the factors, the medical factors, the social and structural factors that influence health and well-being. We've gone from cocktails, multiple pills throughout the day, to now one-a-day pills, to injectables. These are huge advancements that mm-hmm. really make it so rarely are we worried about the person's HIV status. We're worried about their overall health, and HIV just seems to be something that's part of their health.
Right. Yeah, John, huge strides, as Brandon has pointed out, since 1981, right, when we look back to those first reported cases of HIV. We've gone from, you know, drugs that basically slow the virus down to now like preventative and specialized treatment. Last year, though, more than 630,000 people died from AIDS-related illnesses. So as much as we've made progress, I want to be clear, like this is still an epidemic we need to fight, right?
Absolutely. And we still have tremendous challenges. Here in Illinois, about 1,800 people are newly diagnosed every year, about 800 in Chicago. And the majority of those people are Black and Latine, gay men and men who have sex with men, transgender women of color, and Black women are the populations that are most impacted by HIV today. And so that is really our challenge. How do we raise awareness? How do we address stigma? How do we make sure that providers are talking about HIV and particularly about the HIV prevention options like PrEP, pre-exposure prophylaxis,
right,
that are incredibly effective?
Jasmine, tell us more about PrEP, because that's, you know, these days we've got this effective preventative medication, right?
Yes. Yeah, so PrEP, like John said, pre-exposure prophylactic, is one of the best preventative care measures people can take, especially those who are more affected, like Black Latine folk, Black women. A lot of folk think that PrEP is not for them, but PrEP is for everybody. If you are sexually active and you may have risk, or you might have some addiction issues, substance use issues, then PrEP is for everyone.
Yeah.
I think the issue coming up lately is that PrEP might not be as accessible to everyone. If you can't afford those lab bills, if you can't afford to go to the doctor, you don't have insurance, you can't afford to get it mailed to you. It's those little things that might make PrEP.
So are some of the patients, you know, at your organization, are they worried about losing funding for PrEP?
Yes. So attack on AIDS, HIV funding can be an attack on PrEP. And like we say, it might not be me today, but it could be me tomorrow.
And PrEP, so it's absolutely clear. I mean, this is a daily medication and it's taken by people who are HIV negative.
Correct.
And this helps to reduce their risk of actually contracting HIV.
Correct.
Is that right? So that's where we get the preventative piece of things. But John, there's also PEP. So tell me the difference there.
That's correct. So PEP is post-exposure prophylaxis, where someone can take HIV medications to prevent them from becoming HIV positive for up to 30 days. And that's usually accessed through an emergency room. One of the amazing things about PrEP, pre-exposure prophylaxis, is that we now have injectable forms. So there's a new injectable that someone can get every 6 months.
Mm. So not just the pill.
Not just pills. And there's also an injectable given every 2 months. So really incredible options that are out there today.
You know, Brandon, there's still no overall cure for HIV, but there are some promising, it sounds like, treatments and approaches on the horizon even. Can you talk us through some of those?
Definitely. Well, a cure is pretty far away, and even a vaccine, we've gotten close, but both of those are a long way off that still need to be, you know, those are paths that still need to be forged,
mm-hmm.
and also very funding dependent from NIH and others. But what we have now is a nice suite of options with a main goal for folks who are living with HIV, reaching undetectable. So folks who reach undetectable viral load, meaning that the virus is HIV virus is so suppressed in their body, they're unable to pass the virus along to others. That's through medication here. That's a huge tool that we have, getting folks on whatever treatment works for them. And helps them reach viral suppression, virtually eliminates the transmission whatsoever. The others, as we've mentioned, is PrEP, and that prevents anyone from becoming infected. So with those, you know, we have these great tools at our disposal. It takes a lot of resources to build awareness and gain access and other supports.
Yeah.
This is why we say we're not willing to turn back now. We're right on the edge of managing and ending the epidemic with what we have in front of us.
So as we have talked about here, John, the Trump administration has slashed federal support for some of these initiatives that we just listed off, and also eliminated the CDC's HIV prevention division. So is progress that's been made over the last 45 years, is it all just being derailed at this point? How do you see it?
So I think there's still a critical role for advocacy, and not all is lost. While President Trump has proposed eliminating all funding for HIV prevention through the CDC, that would mean an $18 million cut for the state of Illinois.
That's massive.
It's massive, $800 million nationally. And in the state of Illinois alone, it would result in an estimated 5,800 people being newly diagnosed with HIV by the year 2030.
Does that feel like the most damaging change to you from the White House?
It does feel incredibly damaging. The good news is Congress has not gone along with that yet. And I think there's still some common sense left in Congress. I hope there is, that's going to push back on that. I think the other really significant challenge we're facing, which has gone into place, is the cuts to Medicaid that are coming up. And we expect that at least 5,000 people in the state of Illinois out of the 40,000 living with HIV are going to lose their Medicaid coverage because of the Medicaid changes that are happening. And that's going to put incredible strain that puts treatment access, the ability of people to get the medication that saves their lives, at serious risk.
Jasmine, how are federal funding cuts impacting your ability to provide services at the center on Halsted?
So if they were to cut preventative measures, that means cutting things like the hotline.
The HIV hotline.
Correct. Yeah. Places where folks can get fact-based education, sexual wellness education, things that can prevent transmission for HIV or teach folks how to manage their HIV. We have a lot of callers that are calling asking how can they get months ahead of their meds, that including PrEP, because they're worried that they might lose their
medication. So people are paying attention to what's happening nationally.
Of course, yes.
Wow. And John mentioned this earlier, Jasmine, but you know, nearly half of all Illinois HIV AIDS patients are Black.
Correct.
So any thoughts on why infection rates are so high in the Black community?
Definitely education. Stigma is a huge one. Mm-hmm. And then provider trust. A lot of things that I say to folks is make sure when you're doing your advocacy, you're using providers that the community trusts. You can't have folks coming in talking about you to you and they don't really trust you.
You know, President Trump has been banning diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives left and right, right?
Correct.
Is the Black LGBTQ plus community right now, are they feeling particularly vulnerable?
Yes, of course. There's already that level of provider distrust going on. And we found providers that folks can trust, especially our trans community. And if that changes, they might not seek care.
Mm-hmm.
The Trump administration is telling us we can't recognize that someone is transgender. We can't adjust the kind of care we deliver. We can't even ask, do you need gender-affirming care? And we know that when someone who's transgender gets care that affirms their whole self, their HIV outcomes improve. And that's part of the reason that we at AIDS Foundation Chicago sued the Trump administration when they released the anti-diversity, equity, and inclusion and anti-transgender executive orders earlier this year.
What's been the result of that?
The lawsuit is proceeding. A very similar lawsuit won a preliminary injunction.
Okay.
And so we're hoping the same will happen in our case.
Brandon, are you worried that your clinic can stay afloat during the with all this federal funding disappearing?
I'm worried that we might not keep the ground that we've won.
Mm.
I'm worried that care will have to morph and we may have to sacrifice the successes if we're changing care to funding. We're funding from housing to prevention to food. All of this is being impacted, and we need all of these tools for the success that we had now. If we could have done it with less, we would have. And we've all worked with flat budgets from the federal government,
mm-hmm.
and still gained success and still managed to provide care to folks. So I think we can persist, but we're at a point where things will look very different. And the most vulnerable will be the ones who will be the most impacted and stand to lose.
How do you think these Trump funding cuts and policies that we've talked about today impact the reputation of this country internationally, right? Because the United States is supposed to be the leader in fighting AIDS and treating HIV.
Yes, and not just domestically. We were helping across the globe,
right?
With PEPFAR and USAID. There's been some huge reputational damage in the HIV research and care space with those changes, and a lot of ground that will be lost. There are smaller NGOs that are closing.
Yeah.
We're hearing of new infection rates. We're hearing of simple things like access to formula and food and things that were really helpful at mitigating HIV just being completely gone and vanished.
So, I mean, it's good to sort of underline this point here. With all the current treatments, a person who is living with HIV and they're maintaining that viral suppression that we learned about, they can expect a near normal life expectancy. So I wonder how hopeful or concerned you are, Jasmine, that all that incredible progress that we've seen in treating HIV will continue.
Yes, I'm very concerned. We just started having conferences about older adults living with HIV. How can we further assist them in their life planning? And it might change. It might go down to I'm 35 and I don't know if I'm going to live to be 40.
Mm. John, so, are you hopeful or concerned?
So I think we have to remain hopeful. And we launched in 2019 here in the state of Illinois, the Getting to Zero Illinois strategy, which aims to end the HIV epidemic by 2030.
Yeah.
And don't tell anybody, but we're not going to hit that goal by 2030. The goal is going to be stretched out a little bit,
okay,
but we still have to do that work, even if we're doing it with fewer resources, because we know that we have the scientific knowledge, we have the technology to help us to end the HIV epidemic.
We'll leave it there. John Peller is president and CEO of the AIDS Foundation of Chicago. Brandon Hill is president and CEO of Vivint Health. And Jasmine Michael is director of the HIV hotline at the Center on Halsted. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, now let's break down the top local stories of the day. At the table, we had WBEZ Morning Edition anchor Claire Lane and WBEZ reporter and weekend anchor Michael Puente. After a few days out of the office, you know we just had to start with a Thanksgiving postmortem. I asked them how their turkey day went. Claire kicked us off.
Thanksgiving was plentiful.
Plentiful?
Relaxing.
Did you eat a lot?
Yes, I did actually. Spent some dough on some quality dough, some good bread, some good Parker House rolls, worth every penny.
Okay, Parker House rolls, shout out.
Did I eat a lot? Yeah.
What was the best thing you ate? I mean, you teased in advance last week what your wife was going to make.
The empanadas.
Did the empanadas come through?
They came through and I brought some this morning, some fresh ones for the newsroom.
Michael, so you're the best. You're
officially. So it was great. I was at my sister's house, my sister Liz, and she hosted and great turkey, ham, stuffing. Everything was just wonderful.
Yeah, we ate a lot as well. The chef was revived. I told you last week he was sick, but he came through for the family. He perked up. We had a nice, you know, turkey, all the fixins on the side. It was fantastic. Did anyone wake up the next day and go Black Friday shopping?
No.
Not me.
Wow.
I'm cutting back, truly. I treated myself to some candles at a local holiday pop-up supporting small business in Chicago.
Very good.
But I'm not about the Black Friday life online right now. It's overwhelming, wouldn't you say, the amount of emails?
I mean, every possible store I've ever shopped at in life has emailed me this week about a sale, and I'm using air quotes for those who can't see me. Michael, you said not you. Yeah, I guess
I've
everybody
never
else
really
did?
Been a big Black Friday shopper, maybe a few times in my life, but not a lot. Mm-hmm. I've never really bought into it too much.
You don't want a Cole Kmet jersey?
Sure I do. I guess I could find it cheaper somewhere.
So let me check the tabs on your computer, Claire. You're not doing anything for Cyber Monday?
I'm off the grid right now. I'm saving all of my shekels for the holiday season.
Yes, makes sense. Makes perfect sense. So looking outside our window, Michael, I'm reminded of that blast, wintry blast that we got this weekend. Record-breaking snow, actually, on Saturday, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, absolutely. As of 6 p.m. Saturday night, nearly 7 inches fell at O'Hare International Airport at 5.5 at Midway. So our friends at the Sun-Times says that was the most snow in Chicago on a single day in 10 years.
In November, very specific. Yeah, because I almost skipped over that. And I was thinking, how was that the most snow we've ever seen on a single day? Because I remember, I still remember January 2021. I'm still scarred.
It was a lot.
There was a day.
It was tough getting into work Saturday morning to anchor. But we did it. The Chicago Department of Streets and Sanitation deployed more than 220 salt spreaders in response to the storm. So it was tough.
Yeah, holiday travel must have been difficult too, right?
Absolutely. On Saturday alone, 1,300 flights between O'Hare and Midway were canceled.
Yeah.
And yesterday wasn't, you know, it was getting back to normal a little bit. But on Sunday, as of around noon, O'Hare had about 700 delays and 246 flight cancellations, and Midway had about 80 delays and about 8 cancellations. So, you know, a little bit better, but if you're one of those flights that got canceled, you're not happy. And then, you know, the roadways and the highways with all the snow and everything, not good.
Oh, yeah. We had at least one In the Loop producer who got stuck in all that snow coming from Michigan.
But there was a positive on there. Brookville Zoo, it was the first big snowfall for some of the animals at Brookville Zoo. Mm-hmm. So you got a 4-month-old Amur leopard cub and a polar bear, Amelia Gray, saw their first snow.
Oh, that's so cute. Yes. Their first snow. Well, more is headed our way, Claire. So we're not done yet, right?
No,
what can
we're
we expect?
Never done. Well, first of all, it's December 1st.
It is.
So we're going to be doing this song and dance for a little while. Winter weather advisory taking effect at 2:00 this afternoon, slated for now until midnight. Latest from the National Weather Service says it's going to be light to moderate, but it's going to fall for several hours. So we could see between 2 and 4 more inches. And this will be in the downtown area. If you're south of 80, you could see significantly more, but it's going to be a slick commute for those of you trekking during the PM rush.
Another sign of the season, Claire, Chicago's winter overnight parking ban also takes effect today, December 1st.
That's correct. So this happened overnight. The December 1st ban applies to, it's 170 miles of our major city streets. So this is Damon, this is Lawrence, Halsted, Pulaski, what have you. And every day from 3 a.m. until 7 a.m. through April 1st. And this is regardless of weather, we should remind people. And violators, though, subject this year, it's an $150 minimum towing fee. So that's one. Mm-hmm. Then you got the $60 ticket on top of that. Plus, if you're not hip to your car having been towed, which happens, it's a $25 per day storage fee. So if you don't want to break the bank, I might want to consider paying attention to where you're parking your
car. Yeah, and happy dib season to folks who celebrate.
I thought about it. I really did the cliche this morning.
Yeah.
I was like, I dug this out. I also did my whole block shoveling by hand. I do it for cardio. You know, I don't do it for the recognition. But I really thought if I move my car this morning, I could be the first person on the block to just dibs out and set the standard.
You could have been. Did you not take the opportunity?
I wasn't ready emotionally to be ready for that.
What do you normally put out for dibs?
Mostly I use like garden tools and, you know, old chairs from the
big
basement.
Old holes.
This time I'll probably go into my basement and just grab whatever I can, old vacuum, what have you.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Santa.
What about you, Michael? Are you a dibs?
No, because I live outside of the city. I have a driveway and a garage.
Oh, that's
so
privilege.
I don't do that. Sorry about that.
Claire, Northwestern University, they're going to pay $75 million to the Trump administration. This is to settle a discrimination investigation we've been talking about for quite some time. What do we need to know?
So this is the deal with the Trump administration to end. It was a series of investigations and essentially to restore hundreds of millions of dollars in federal research funding for the school. Trump's administration had cut $790 million in grants to Northwestern in this standoff that, if you remember, contributed to the resignation in September of university president Michael Schill. The administration argued the school had not done enough to fight anti-Semitism. That was sort of at the base of this argument. But under the agreement announced, a Northwestern will make the payment to the U.S. Treasury over the next 3 years and in turn get their grant funding back.
So, Michael, are you smiling today? Because the Chicago Bears are number one in the NFC.
I haven't stopped smiling.
Yeah.
It's probably the biggest win in years
huge.
For the Bears.
Beating the Super Bowl champs, the Philadelphia Eagles, 24-15 on Friday. I mean, what a time to be alive.
Absolutely. And nobody really gave the Bears much chance in this game. And they brought it to them. And the running backs for the Bears, Kyle Manungai and DeAndre Swift, the first Bears running back to have more than 100 yards in the same game, dare I say it, since 1985, Bowl year, since Walter Payton and Matt Sui. And you got to know, if you're from Chicago, you're a Bears fan, you have to know who Walter Payton is.
Yes.
You have to. So.
Absolutely. No, that was pretty exciting stuff. I mean, and I'm feeling hopeful for the rest of their regular season. What does that schedule look like?
Well, it's a tough schedule. They got five games left. Three of those games are at home. But this Sunday, they play against, of course, the Green Bay Packers. Big game up in Lambeau Field. It's just going to be lights out exciting. Probably the biggest game between the Bears and Packers since 2011, when they were in the NFC Championship. That was a big game. So they got a game against the Detroit Lions at the end of the season, game against the 49ers and the Browns. That Browns game, probably their easiest one, but you never know. I mean, every game is going to be tough. Every team in the NFL, no matter how good they are,
right,
playing a bad team, we saw it yesterday, these games are tough. They struggle. So I know they hit on the Bears for having close games, but it seems like every team are having close games.
Yeah, you agree, Claire?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and this is a momentum team. Caleb Williams talks about this a lot. One step at a time, get better every game. And he's been doing that, and the offense has been doing that, so we gotta try to ride it. I say we, because it really, you know, everybody is
feeling
this.
Oh, yeah, we're part of this.
Right,
man. We're getting up for those practices.
Even me.
Yeah.
Well, the bandwagoner.
And it was great timing with the HBO Super Bowl Shuffle documentary.
Right.
I don't know if anybody saw that, but it was like, that came out last week, and then this big game Friday.
Yes.
So it's all about minute by minute.
There's this connection tonight.
It's a vibe.
1985.
Very much.
I mean, with the whole Walter Payton, Matt Sui,
yeah,
DeAndre Swift, and Kai Manungai connection is just, I don't know.
It's electric.
It's electric.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, Claire, a new report from a home security research firm ranks Chicago number one in porch theft.
Yeah.
Yeah. How much of an issue is that? Package theft.
You know, I was actually seeing it, not that I monitor much on Facebook, but the neighborhood pages were very active over the weekend. I don't know if you saw that, too.
I did.
People telling neighbors to beware. Chicago apparently has more than 6 million occurrences of porch piracy worth nearly $250 million and lost items. That's the latest from this report. Obviously, you know, being in a city, you're in a denser populous area, so that means higher average package value. So
right,
that's where Chicago is really coming in with this. Residents being advised to schedule deliveries if you know you've got something of value coming, make sure someone's at home during those times.
Mm-hmm.
And when in doubt, keep your porch lights on.
Yeah, absolutely. What else are you watching?
Well, and related to the Bears, and this is, you know, another instance of Chicago's Wiener Circle giving out free dogs for various things.
Yes.
This is if Ben Johnson were to have taken off his shirt after their win, which he did in Philadelphia. There's been a lot of B-roll all on this, all over Chicago media. He's very amped up, doing sort of like a Hulk muscle flex, shirtless. So Johnson delivered on that. The Wiener Circle says they're giving out free dogs tomorrow.
Okay.
So expect there to be lines. We'll see if they send Michael Puente out there again.
Again. Jeez. Michael, while you are in the hot seat, Pope Leo XIV, he's on his first papal trip abroad. Now, he traveled to Turkey on Thanksgiving. He's in Lebanon today. What is he doing there?
Well, Sasha, he's there to be sort of this messenger of peace and to show solidarity with a country just facing multiple crises, including ongoing conflict and severe economic collapse. So he's there to try to bring the area together and promote peace.
Yeah, and he received some special gifts from Chicago journalists in the Vatican Press Corps.
That's right. There's this tradition where the Vatican Press Corps they give a gift to the Pope, and a CBS reporter gave him a bat that was once owned by legendary White Sox player Nelly Fox, a great second baseman. We know the Pope is a huge White Sox fan. I don't know if he's bigger than me, but I'll give it to Pope Leo.
I don't know. He might be.
He's the most famous one, of course. He gave him this bat, and the Pope was struck by it. He did ask the reporter, how did you get this to security? So he was also given some White Sox emblazed socks.
Okay.
And I think there were some other gifts
he was given.
All the necessities. So he is White Sox decked out at the Vatican. I mean, this is such a great story. Who thought the Pope is a White Sox fan? But, you know, it just keeps going on and on.
Yeah.
So congratulations to the Pope for that bat.
WBEZ Morning Edition anchor Claire Lane and weekend anchor and reporter Michael Puente.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Andrea Guthman, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/InTheLoop. Thanks for listening.